Let's do a mic test. Good? Mic test, everybody? Okay. Good morning. For the 13th time? I don't know. Today's talk is not that long, but it can be a bit on the complex side because I'll be speaking about the various religions that should take about a semester each to explain. And I'll be using metaphors. Where's my metaphor lovers? I'll be using metaphors and examples from around the world. But if you want my text, you'll be able to read my words later. Ron, how soon does that go out? Okay. So as we live sandwiched between Charlottesville and a new semester, a word about what religion is from Hippolyte Taine, a 1875 Frenchman who wrote, "Religion is by its nature a metaphysical poem married to faith. In this way, it is effective and popular. For to be felt, religion must put on a body. There must be rite, legend, ceremony. If it is to talk to men, women, and children, the simple, every person, for the human mind itself needs ideas expressed in pictures. Through visible form, religion can throw its great weight upon the conscience to be a counterweight to natural egotism, cool the mad impulse to animal passion, guide the will to self-sacrifice and devotion, direct people to give themselves wholly to the service of others or truth. It can make ascetics and martyrs, sisters of charity and missionaries. In every society, religion is a precious natural organ. People need it to think of the infinite and to live well. If it suddenly failed, they would feel a great sad void in their soul and would hurt each other all the more. You would try in vain to snatch it from them. Hands which attempted it would touch no more than the envelope. Religion will grow again like flesh after a bloody operation. Its roots are too deep to be pulled up." So, Moses, Jesus, Lao Tzu, Muhammad, a shaman, and Gandhi walk into a bar. And now you see my dilemma. How in the world do you finish that joke? There's a lot to chew on this morning. I don't know what I was thinking when Ron asked me for a title. There's too much to consider. Let's start by raising hands if you've had significant experiences with these major faiths, and I'll go through them one by one. People who've had experiences with Buddhism. Okay. Christianity. Confucianism. Hinduism. Judaism. Taoism. Okay, thank you. While there are more, I'd like to discuss with you these faiths and their instructional values for us, and I shall employ three terms or metaphors: imagination, languages, and water. And by the way, if you think I've missed something, join me in coffee hour downstairs and tell me where I went wrong. First, the imagination. What is religion but imagination? Gods, angels, demons, explanation for evil and eclipses, prayer. Organized religion is always acts of the collective and the individual imaginations. Why? Because religions traffic in ultimate truths, like the existence of an afterlife or God is love. And such truths cannot be verified by scientific analysis, but they can only be imagined. Religious truths are best grasped symbolically. Language, art, poetry, these are the paintbrushes that the imagination uses to portray the unportrayable. So the power of a faith is expressed imaginatively, with poets and artists as our priests, talking about places like heaven or hell, the soul, and imagining what it would be like to please the divine one. But these are each and every one products of the imagination. But through this imagination process, we get comforted and assured that even in this sometimes dangerous world, everything's going to be all right. Every little thing's going to be all right. I miss Bob Marley, but anyway. So, don't try to sing up here. So, to be religious is to engage in acts of the imagination. Want proof? Want proof? Next 15 seconds, pray. Now, reflect on what you just did. Where did your prayer go? Who heard it? What's supposed to happen now? We're in the realm of the imagination, folks. Imagination could go two ways, however, because our imaginations must be fed. Religion is, or should be, an imaginative force for good against other imagination products like racism, devils, and the like. We've recently witnessed what religion-inspired forces of hate and division, giving privilege to one group or color of skin or class, what it can do. Both good and bad religions use the imagination to articulate their truths and to recruit. An imagined allegiance to a swastika is functionally no different than an imagined allegiance to a cross. As Abraham Lincoln so wisely phrased it, both sides read the same Bible, pray to the same God, each invokes his aid against the other. The prayers of both cannot be answered. Let me change metaphors from religion as imagination to religion as spiritual languages. How many of you in the room are bilingual? Bilingual? Trilingual. Okay, more? Four? Five? Four. Okay, good. You know that speaking more languages enables you to understand more because you know that many concepts do not translate from Spanish to Chinese. However, if you know both Spanish and Chinese, you can think two different ways, take two neural routes to the same conclusion simultaneously. Since our cave-dwelling days, we have imagined that something is behind the lightning. Something is inside that woolly mammoth. Something is flowing in that wild river or embedded in that odd rock formation. And we have built respect and reverence for these somethings. We have imagined it prudent to get on the good side of these somethings. And so we use the best possible language skills that we can. In small groups, we have imaginatively, if clumsily, called and called on these somethings and energies as God. Religions are languages we use to speak of and speak with the divine ones that we imagine inhabit the earth, the animal, the human being, and even the sky, because our imaginations must be tended. Religion as imagined language, about imagined powers, will explain and help to fix you. Religions are like a song that a people will sing over and over. And whether that song is the national anthem, or Amazing Grace, or We Shall Overcome, or whether it's Dixie, our imagined identities get massaged. And we connect with others who follow this religion's God. And we get supported and feel empowered when we gather with like-minded and like-hearted people who sing from the same imagination-produced songbook as we. So religion produces an imaginative landscape of language about imaginative forces that helps us to negotiate life and join social justice movements and connect with people of like heart and like mind. One thing I've learned is that while I am not yet everything I say or wish or imagine myself to be, I can be that. And all religions help in this. They first show us what's good and right. They show us a standard and then show us maybe where we've missed the mark, which can be good news because they're going to show us how to reach that mark. We want our hearts to grow as large as they are meant to, yes. Knowing what hinders us on earth can be helpful, yes. And the religious will say this, trust God more. Meditate, still your anxious brain. See yourself as a part of all things, not disconnected. Fill your day with prayers, and less evil will be able to sneak in. Practice, practice, practice. Make good habits. and your life will be better. This is what these religions tell us. Even if your lifespan is shortened, or disease, or war, or crime visit, you will still be better off for the practice. My third metaphor change. From imagination to languages to now water. Taoist, where's my Taoist? Taoism teaches that we are to be like water, which always and naturally, without any expenditure of energy, seeks the lowest place as home. The water table. Down, 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 underneath the layers, the depths, the unknown, is our water table, metaphorically speaking. This is our spiritual home, our millennia-old repository of human wisdom. And that's what religions are. At their best and on their good days, and we all have bad days, religions will sink a shaft down to that water table and draw up waters of deep, ancient human wisdom. Because each religion translates wisdom from these waters into words and then pours this spiritual water into differently shaped containers. You use chalices here. Others use teacups. Some use goblets, glasses, grails, tumblers. Some use flasks. Some use beakers, some use jugs. You feel my metaphor? This is religion's genius. Religions are containers that carry this water to those who thirst. What is not cool, so not cool, is when a religion says that the container they have crafted is more holy than the water it contains. Or their water is the only water, and all other water is poison, and all the other cups are idols. The shape of our water and our container and its water are proprietary properties of our God himself. And thus, if you're not drinking the well water from our containers, then you are going to... Well, you can fill in the blank. But what's the essence of this water? Each religion has independently come up with a version of the golden rule. Do unto others. Don't do to others. Before you do to others, think. See yourself in others. Reciprocity. And I'm going to send a copy of these golden rules when I email my talk to Ron so you can have them too. But besides the golden rule, what else is in this water? So here are my very selective snapshots of what I've learned from drinking from the various cups of our world's religions. From Judaism first, I've learned that we human beings contain two tendencies. The tendency to prefer or choose the bad, and the tendency to choose the good. In Hebrew, the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov. And life is ever a choice, a practice of either becoming good or bad. How do you know what you'll become? Well, let's take a line from the first people's story about the little boy discussing with his grandfather about those two wolves within, one good, one bad, fighting a civil war within them. You know the story, right? Which one's going to win, Grandpa? The one you feed. This is the power of Judaism. The Talmud teaches it this way. When you are my witnesses, then I am God. But if you do not bear witness to me, then I cannot be God. That'll teach. This is a deeply imaginative word of water to a thirsty world whose imagination must be fed. Next, Christianity. My first spiritual language, and one in which I'm ordained, which is a ritual involving empty hands on an empty head. The first message in the Christian water vessel is grace. Grace. I am not the last word. We are not the last players. Hope remains even in the darkest of times, which some of you feel are here today. What we call evil does not have the final say-so. And my worst action does not define me. Take that, prison industrial complex. Because grace will have its day. Grace will have its say. Yeah, anybody ever been forgiven? You know how cool that water is. I also learned from my Christian tradition language about how a text can be powerful. The Bible, heard of it, is the most misunderstood, worst quoted, least read book in the world, but it's a bestseller. 5 billion copies of the Bible, and yet we still use or ignore it to teach war and enslave and cheat. We pretty much lawyer our way through its difficult teaching. Sorry, lawyers. No offense intended. And yet, this Bible is the most frequented text for people like Gandhi and Martin Luther and Martin Luther King Jr. and Dorothy Day and Mother Teresa. Their understandings of the Bible has changed the world in our lifetime. Buddhism. The Buddha taught me the power of interruption, which I've already shared with you a few years back. Like a computer that's been left on too long, or a hard drive that gets hopelessly fragmented and is too slow, we in our anxious living go on and on and on, thinking it's all up to me. Gotta get this report done. Gotta work this problem out. Too much to do. And if you've ever been in this state, or been with someone else in that state, that someone is useless. Buddha teaches that we lose contact with our original goodness when we get fragmented and keep on like a bull in a china shop. We become dangerous to ourselves and to others, even as we pretend otherwise. Instead, Buddha teaches, this is the very time to interrupt. You've lost yourself, your purpose, your perspective. Time to get back in touch with that true, undiminished self. And so Buddha calls for planned, intentional interruptions every day. He called them meditation. Meditation softens our hard places, clears our fogs, brings focus to the necessary, and points us like a compass again to our true north. The Buddha was asked, "What have you gained from meditation?" He replied, "Nothing. However, let me tell you what I've lost. Anger, anxiety, depression, insecurity, fear of old age and death." I cannot emphasize enough how important this interruption by doing nothing is. Indeed, all the religions, all of them, have a similar spiritual technology of holy interruption. Hindus do pilgrimages, meditate, celebrate lots of holidays. Jews have Sabbath and holy days. Christians have the same and bring in personal prayer and pilgrimages. Muslims do this best, I think. Imagine taking a break 5 times every day to pray. Or take 1 month out of the year to fast. Or 1 month out of your life to pilgrim off to Mecca. Oh my goodness. Having just mentioned Muslims, I'll say this one thing about this thing that I've most learned from Islam than any other faith. It's the word hospitality. When I traveled as a 20-year-old through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, my money was worthless. As a lone person and stranger in the marketplaces, I was every time quickly snatched up, taken off to a tea shop, a restaurant, a hookah joint. One does not get in the way of a Muslim practicing hospitality. Another great thing about Islamic practice, as well as Taoism, is a strict refusal to depict the divine. No icons, no pictures of people or Muhammad or God. Keep that mental space clear, that cup empty, because if you fill up people's heads with pictures of God, then they'll start latching onto them. And when people start grasping onto images of God, they retain only those that look like them or look like men. And when this happens, their God won't look like others or women. This is not new to you. So keep the God image undefined. Lao Tzu, in the first verse of the Tao Te Ching, says, "The way or Tao that can be spoken of ain't the true way or Tao," my translation. Sort of like the water you can speak of in words is not that water table, water that will slake my thirst. Or a picture of a fire does not warm. So keep the image of God loosey-goosey. It prevents idolatry. Speaking of Taoism, I love their emphasis on wu wei, not doing. Want to maintain something you hate? Just fight it. Worry it. Harass it. Imprison it. But if you really want to make spiritual progress, don't force a river downstream any faster than it's already going. Don't force a key in a sticky lock. Jiggle it instead. Don't force an argument you know you'll lose. Let the weird stay weird. The jerks remain jerks. In due time, every fool who persists in their folly will become wise, William Blake. It may take a few lifetimes, though. We don't need to hurry them along, as they have their own clock. Now, after today's service downstairs, you'll do well to call my sanity into question. What, Mullinax? Don't resist number 45? Let black lives not matter? Let's talk downstairs, okay? But for now, you cannot hurry or worry your way into happiness. Now hear this. Happiness takes place in the now and the here and the this. Now hear this. It's the only time and place one can live and love and do compassion and do our good work. So Hindus, what have you taught me? Hindus have this reputation of being polytheists, which in our worldview says is idolatry on steroids. However, what most Westerners don't get is their polytheism is a hide-and-go-seek game that hides our world's greatest statement on monotheism. Yes, monotheism's highest achievement is in Hinduism. The name Brahma is more than the name of one of the top three gods in India. It's the name for the ultimate reality underlying all, from dark matter to everything else. Think of Brahma as the soil out of which everything grows, including the gods. The gods themselves, Hindus say correctly, are created. All the universe emerges out of Brahma as a leaf emerges from a tree. So everything is therefore holy and divine. We're all gods, by the way. Okay? Namaste means exactly this. The God me honors and recognizes the God you. It's all divine, folks. How's that for a cool monotheism? One God, quadrillions of masks. If every faith had this expansive view of God, we could end our wars tonight. Hindus give us our golden rule back to us, but on a divine platter. We're all divine already. What we do to someone else, we do to God at the same time. What an ethic. Think about that next time someone cuts you off in traffic. Think about that next time number 45 is on your screen. One more religion. Are you still with me? It's the world's most influential religion, even if fewer and fewer people acknowledge it, Confucianism. What does this ethic teach me? Human nature is good. This single statement overturns the number one teaching my own faith language has taught me since I was a baby, that I'm an original sinner. For someone who grew up with that imagined story, this is a great liberation. Mencius once told a story that goes like this. Suppose someone suddenly sees a child about to fall into a well. Anyone in such a situation would have a feeling of alarm and compassion, not because one wants to get in good with the child's parents, not because you want fame among all your friends and neighbors, and not because you dislike the sound of the child's cries. From this, he said, we can see that if one is without the feeling of compassion, one is not human. If your first natural impulse is to sacrifice your time, your skin, your life on behalf of a baby, how can anyone say there's original sin in me? What if it's original blessing? Oh, I've left out so much. You Baha'is, shamans, can take me to task in a few minutes. But I want to explain how religions are neither life sentences nor life insurance policies. I kept hoping, Ron, that a cool ending story would find me that I could share with you, but I have failed. So let me bumper sticker what I've just learned, and I'll pass on to everyone else. First, religions are human-made, custom-made responses to life situations and context. Two, religions are imaginative interrupters that accompany us to test our thoughts, evaluate our actions. Third, they bring joy, connection, liberation on their good days. Four, they have each dug a well down to the human water table, and each has a particular name for the wisdom they draw up and a particular cup. And five, it is good to taste all the water you can. because religions are the way we share our predicaments and our ways to overcome them. Now, Karl Marx is going to say that religion is an addictive opium. Freud is going to say that religion is a neurosis that we mature out of. Some say religion is more superstition than imagination. Still others say is that religion at its base is hate and prejudice. And yet, here you are. Here you are, apparently unaddicted, apparently mature, apparently not hating and imagining a better world together. Oh my God. So relax and enjoy those cups from which you drink.
I envy your students. Wow. I have a hunch you could probably get some pretty good enrollment.